This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. Today, we're going to be talking to Nigel Smith. And Nigel comes into the studio with so much energy and a beautiful skin tone. I just have to tell our audience so they know who is in the studio with us today. So, Nigel, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be a guest on the show.
Thank you.
Should we tell him where he's from, at least?
I'm getting ready to do that.
Okay.
So, Nigel, you are the Flea Theater. So talk to us a little bit about your role there at the Flea Theater, just for starters, so that our audience understands who you are and what you're about.
Yeah. So I work at the Flea Theater. I'm the artistic director there. I joined the Flea in 2015. And most recently, during our pandemic, we had the opportunity, you know, being called in by our community and turning inward to really take our institution in a new direction, which is extremely exciting. So we've been building a new mission and values and striking out on a new path.
This is something because when I look at any information around the Flea Theater, it talks about experimentation and innovation. Now, I want to talk about this piece around stories focused on Black, brown, and queer artists. When I think of queer, they're Black and brown. So what is the distinction that you're making with this?
Yeah. You know, we're looking at, in the experimental theater space, it has predominantly been a space of whiteness. And it's predominantly been a space of straight whiteness. And so we're looking at what are the communities that we could most support and have the deepest impact on in our community. And so looking at that intersectionality of Black, brown, and queer, those stories being in that tumbler coming through, getting all of our attention and our resources. And I think the other way to really think about it, you know, is that previous to this shift, the Flea was, you know, any artist, any experimental artist could come in and work a piece and we would support them in it. And in this time of deep consideration, we're like, okay, so what are the artists that would move through this space without, you know, being nurtured in their full cultural authenticity? And we had conversations with our previous artists, with current artists. You know, we're lucky. At the staff level, I'm the head of the staff level, and at the board level, Nona Hendricks is our board co-chair.
Now, she was with Patti LaBelle and the Bluebells,
yes,
right? I remember
was.
Nona Hendricks, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And wrote, not just with them, but wrote a number of their tunes. I mean, Lady Marmalade, that's...
Voulez-vous coucher?
That's all the way. Right.
It's a board member.
And so that's thought, you know, we were uniquely positioned as, you know, at those intersections between our staff and our board, Black folks, brown folks, queer folks, those intersections, that we could really create an environment where those artists could thrive and be at the center. So, you know, I want you to think ahead and walking into the Flea that this is a place where Black folks and brown folks and queer artists are able to just spread their arms and say, this is my place. I move the way I need to move here. And I'm showing up as an audience or a guest to that culture.
So this wasn't the Flea beforehand?
No.
Oh, well, I did not realize
that. So what was
that?
It beforehand?
Beforehand, it was to raise a joyful hell in a small space.
Huh.
Good choice of words to change.
Huh.
Yeah, so, but in some ways, as I'm trying to get what you're saying, is that you've used this period to reinvent the organization and also its mission and a whole lot of other things, yeah?
Yes, absolutely.
So in some ways, that's an experiment in its own right, yeah?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, this is the thing that we're always asking ourselves is how can we do better? Do more? How can we really target those folks who are breaking into the scene in New York, you know, or who are making new experiments later in their career or mid-career? And where can we actually like push the form and push who's getting that deep exposure? So, yeah, those are the things.
So what makes you a safe space? What makes it what is in the culture there that makes it safe for Black, brown, and queer artists to tell their stories and to live themselves fully and be fully out? to be your most authentic self.
I'm glad you asked that for a measure room with padding around it.
So often, you know, you go into a workplace and you got to wear some kind of facade. Yeah. You know, you can't bring 100 because people just typically aren't ready for it. But in theater, you want to bring your 100. Yeah. So talk to us about what makes it safe in that culture. What attitudes had to be shifted?
Yeah.
What changed?
Yeah. I mean, number one, what changed was saying it out loud. So the invitation is there. Mm-hmm. So the folks know this is the place that's
being asked of you. So they belong. That feeling of belongingness.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like found a home, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it's a nurturing. And so the nurturing begins with a conversation with an artist about a project they're excited about. And it's not just the theater as producer coming in saying, okay, we see your idea, we're going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's one way of producing and
interesting.
Making.
Interesting.
We want to move into the place of partnership. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we start out by throwing, like unveiled ourselves with our new mission by throwing a house party. So we have a 3-theater venue in Tribeca on Thomas Street. We got a basement theater, down and dirty, mm-hmm. beautiful brick walls. We got a ground floor theater that has an outside garden to it, indoor, outdoor, and then the upstairs black.
I want to go.
You
got
you want to live there.
Yeah. Come hang out. Because Miss Lily's catered. So we had great Caribbean food there. We had great drinks by them. We had wonderful, queer and black acts. We had, the Robot Johnson, Nona Hendrix performed with her band. And so what we were saying is that this is a place of community first. Mm-hmm. It's a place to hang, meet people, see art, have something great and delicious to eat. And then let's get to what do you want to make and how do you want to make it in partnership?
Where does the experimentation come in? There's something interesting about you talk about this as a safe haven for experimentation and unpretentious home for risk taking. Young actors. So how does that show up? How does it appear? Like what kind of projects?
Part of it is shifting the culture, right?
Yeah. Well, part of it's the way they run the organization,
right.
The fact that it's not hierarchical, it's partnership.
And, right.
Yeah, so those experimentations actually touch every part of the organization. So you're just talking about right now, like on the operational level, how do we partner with artists? How do we partner with other artistic producers? So we have resident companies, the FLED and Emerge 125 are resident companies who are totally autonomous, but we give them free space, we give them marketing support because their missions align with ours. And we think a home where multiple organizations are reaching out to black, brown, and queer artists and doing it from their own kind of, maybe it's dance with Emerge 125 or, young emerging artists with the FLED, that all of that is going to create a stew of it all happening together.
I was going to say, it sounds like it's a collective, right?
Yeah.
But see, my question
collaborative.
It's a collective collaborative. Yeah. But collaborative. My question, though, is if you give it to them for free, so how do you ensure that that's a financially viable
partnership? How do you sustain it financially?
Yeah. Ongoing? Yeah. What's our model?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're
we want the numbers.
Yeah. We give it all that.
The data.
opening the books.
Only to the extent that you feel comfortable.
To the extent we feel comfortable. The majority of our support comes from foundation and individuals who believe in the mission and believe in the vision, who support us and want to see it continue to happen. That lives alongside, earned income. We are a rental space as well, so we rent the space to make sure we can keep the lights on and keep it staffed. And, with our resident companies, there's a portion of it that's free, but then outside of that, they can rent the space in addition to it. But we really exist to up the capacity of these organizations. One of the reasons we turn to black, brown, and queer is if you look at where is investment happening in the theater, where is underinvestment happening. And so the FLEA, owning our own building in Tribeca and having...
Owning your own building. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. Right. Mm-hmm. That's the hit I didn't drop is, that owning the building, it itself is a resource that, can support folks.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to the artistic director of the FLEA Theater, Nigel Smith. So, Eli, you can pick up where we left off.
When you came in, you actually dropped this jewel about this woman who's been writing a play for over a year, one a day, and that you were going to produce this. And to me, it's like,
Yeah.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, what are the – like, we exist – to invest in risk.
Oh, I like that. That's why you live.
We want to show up and see the new
visions.
It's a
very dangerous place.
He says it's a very dangerous place.
No, it's
so a little bit.
But it's exciting. Yes. But what, I mean, let's think about it. Why do many people choose New York? Choose to stay here if you were born here, or choose to move here if you've moved here from somewhere else? It's that there is something electric and novel happening in this city. That is the thing that we're looking for. Now, it doesn't have to necessarily be formal. It could be you're telling a story we haven't heard before. Or you're coming at it from a different way. You're like, oh, we're going to have a robot on stage. It's in conversation with the reactors, you know. Or this is all going to be told in reverse poetry. You know, like, we're really looking at, like, how does form meet the expression of the now?
Well, I have another theory about that. So Manhattan basically is granite. That's why they can build these skyscrapers. But 40% of the traffic of the tri-state area is from 14th Street down to Wall Street. So that means you have people walking around on granite with all this electromagnetic signals on.
Okay, I see where you're going now.
That's why we're experimenting.
It's in the energy. Yeah.
It's only a theory, but.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about your core values, because I think that clearly is driving the direction that you're going. You talk about being human-centered, anti-racism and anti-oppression, transparency. I mean, all of these are part of the word salad we're using today. Mm-hmm. But how does that show up in your space?
Yeah. I mean, these are dear to me, because we spent the last 18 months really deciding what were going to be our core values and discussing them as a leadership team, as a staff, as a community. You know, you mentioned human-centered. And this most recent process of Arden, we developed a new work and presented it this winter. There were company members who had children. Mm-hmm. And we found out in the moment that there were some rehearsals that happened and they didn't have childcare. And so we had two options.
Critical element. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, we could say, hey, we understand, you know, step away for those days. Or we could figure out another way forward. And so we sat down as a team and said, okay, what are resources we can redirect so that we can support the human who wants to show up and help make the work, you know? And so that means showing up with the resources. It also means that when we make decisions, we make them for the people before we make them for the business, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Could you repeat what you just said?
We make the decisions for the people before the business.
Yeah, that right there is a real paradigm
right.
shift.
No,
right?
I'm just sitting here thinking.
I love that.
How,
I love where you're coming. I love in the research. I just love where you're coming from. Go ahead, Eli.
No, sorry. I was just sitting here thinking about, you know, this idea about existing to, you know, invest in risk and there's nothing you're talking about. And, you know, what I think comes to my mind is how in some ways these organizations like yourself are how catalytic they are in transformation. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't take, in some ways, doesn't take a lot, you know. It's just in some ways the existence and the things that you put out there in the world really make a difference. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I wanted to talk about your non-hierarchical leadership practice and radically equitable. Meaning, you know, when I think of non-hierarchical leadership, you know, one can go into not chaos, but, you know, this whole notion of people being in unstructured spaces and not always knowing where they fit, what they want to do. Yeah. So how does that show up, and how are you implementing that?
Yeah.
And how does it work?
Yeah. How is that happening?
Yeah, it's a great question.
In this conditioned mindset that we all know we have. And that's been revealed through the racist structures that we have in this country. So it's the mind conditioning. So how do you?
Yeah. And we come out of a history of a buck stops here mentality.
Absolutely.
There was one person at the top whose will delivered the way.
Oh, can't stand it. Can't stand it.
That's what we're working. You know, and that's part of the experiment. You know, so where are we at now? So folks have different realms of responsibility. So, for instance, I'm ultimately responsible for programming what goes on our stage. That does not mean that I wield the programming, you know, the programming fork. And I'm like, only this goes on the fork. It means that that's my responsibility. At the end of the day, I have to report to the board and our constituencies about why things landed on stage. But as we're developing what is going to happen there, It's deeply consultative. So the other staff members, our input in there, they have to be just as excited about a project going on our stage as I am. You know, our resident companies, we don't tell them what to put on the stage. We are there as a producing partner with them for them to make their decision happening. And so in that way, the power, it's not just sitting at the top somewhere at a board or some president of the corporation, but it's really sort of pulled out all around into these different responsible pies. And we check in. So the number one thing in our office is before any major decision is made, you ask the circle.
How do you resolve in like a point where you get impasses of like?
The key for us is, so I'm ultimately responsible. So we have to be deeply consultative, need to find buy-in. If there is disagreement, it then becomes my role to actually take us through that moment and make that decision.
So, you know, I was thinking also talking a little bit about this idea of how the Flea is pushing the limits of theater and experimentation. And what comes to mind, I think I've seen this too, and it's not inexpensive to do this, this idea about virtual sets, or is it experimentation in the forms of the plays or the topics of the plays? Or can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I want to talk a bit about Arden, But Not Without You, which we just produced this past winter, which was a fantastic experimentation. We had Carrie Mae Weems, one of the best photographers and visual artists of our nation. We had Okwi Okpakwasili.
Oh, yeah. He's on the show. Right?
Oh, yes.
She's great.
Okwi,
yeah.
And her partner, Peter Bourne, who make performance in many different ways. I think most notably a dance performer. And then Diana Oh, who writes plays, writes concerts, is like this queer goddess, and all coming together to co-make a work that holds both ritual participation, visual art, new storytelling and testimonies, and then turns into a rock concert in its last 30 minutes. You know, so it's like people are like, I don't know what it was, but it shook me and I loved it. You know, so it's about how can the form arrive out of a driving question.
Going back to this whole leadership question, was the role that your board is playing and how you are even turning that on its head somewhat? You know, when I think of board, I think of fiduciaries. I think that we have to be involved in compliance. We have to be involved in governance. We have to be involved in strategy. Now, you're talking about bringing on members of the community that you serve. That's a good thing. But then there's also a staff engagement that, when I read this, I found that it was deeper than what I see on most boards. Can you elaborate? Because I get so tired of the old way of doing things around. If you've got money, you can be on a board. That's not good. It silences too many voices. So if you could just talk about how that shows up at the Flea.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, let's talk about what is off first.
Okay, fantastic.
You know, you talked about that we've inherited, you know, a racist capitalist system. And our board is our overseer. What is an overseer? That is somebody to go out and do the master's work and keep people in line.
Oh, I get it. You don't even like that.
So
that
idea of overseeing and oversight. Not just charge, but it immediately charges us to quote unquote crack a whip. On whose back? Okay, so we want to invert that. And when you look at our operational model and what we're experimenting with is we actually move from, even just visually, from this idea of oversight to this idea of nourishment. So the Flea is actually, we're creating nutrients and water. We're going to flower all these art. We're going to, you know, we're going to nutrient and water all of these artists and different projects. And so our board actually needs to be a room full of stakeholders who want to pour themselves into the organization and support it. And so who is best set to do that? It's the folks working on the ground as community members showing up to see work. It's the folks who are actually making the work. So that's the artists, that's the people on staff, and it's those donors, doers, and door openers who really want to get in and make a big change. But we all come in at this level of support. And you ask, you know, specifically, like, wow, you know, deep staff engagement. The staff is the day-to-day of the organization. What we're trying to work out here is that we're hand-in-hand with our board colleagues and building this. Yes, you know, by law, our board has certain fiduciary responsibilities to put the interests of the organization ahead of themselves. That is the law. But that does not mean that that can't happen consultatively with staff. And it doesn't mean that one needs to have money. Our board's give-get is to make a meaningful contribution.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
And we're talking to Nigel Smith, having a delightful conversation with Nigel Smith, Artistic Director of the Flea Theater. Eli, I think you had a point you wanted to make.
No, I was listening to this idea. It's a really unique model, as you know. And the thought that comes to mind is that, is this a model that you think is transportable to other organizations? And is there any interest in you doing that, either as consulting advisor or speaker at a panel? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, great. I mean, this is actually a deep interest both for myself and for our colleagues at the FLED, one of our resident companies. I mean, we know that our experimentation can, hopefully there are some real wins here that can become replicable in our field.
In other fields too, though, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Creative group that
that's what I'm thinking.
Or,
yeah. You need to write all of this down.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We have a big 15-page prospectus at this point.
Right.
You know, and we've been working with this great organization, CJAM, led by Candace Jackson. It's a Black woman-led consulting firm. And they came in to work with us on restoration with former artists, to create a new mission and to work on our new vision for the company. And so they've really helped us to codify, you know, what we are up to as we're working through this. But, you know, yes, you know, when I can peek my head up above the sand, I'd love to, you know, but this, the flea is full on right now.
Do you need the money to be able from the board to help generate, to do the fundraising? I mean, this is something that has really held art and culture organizations captive, you know, that money, the wealthy donor.
Absolutely, we need the money. Every year, we have to raise about 80% of our budget, you know, and our budget is approaching $1 million. And so, you know, we need to raise $800,000 every year, you know, and so that's a real task, you know, both on the staff side and on the board side, you know, and that the board is actively engaged in soliciting funds. But this goes back to our core value of transparency, which is, why are you giving money in that situation? So if someone is giving money to exert power over the institution, that's not someone we want to be in relationship with. We are looking for partners who want to help steward and support a different way of being. I think that, you know, our field has gotten trapped in the past, and many fields have gotten trapped in the past. Just because you give us the money, you get to have the board seat, or you get to determine what we're going to put on our stages. That is not the way we're moving forward. That's not the way we hope other institutions move forward. But yes, we need resources to do this. This is work for the common good and for our culture. This is work that, you know, if we had to charge audiences actually what it costs to put the work up, you know, we wouldn't be able to reach the audiences we want to reach. And so who wants to partner with us to help make that happen?
You know, it's interesting that innovative organizations go from the why to the how to the what, as opposed from the what to how to the why. And invariably, when people do projects, they don't ask why. Like, why would people be interested? Why would this work? Why would you invest money in this organization? So it's a powerful question.
This is really a sea change, a welcome one. Right. We still have organizations that help in the fundraising space that are saying, well, if you really want to have a successful board, the give or get should be 10,000. That's what it should be. It should be 10,000. Nothing less than that. And I'm like, but look at all the people that are left out of decision making. Look at all the voices that are not amplified. So what do you think about that?
Are you liberated and free in that model? Does that liberate you? I mean, look, we are coming out of our own history in which, when you put that power in a handful of folks, you suddenly are up doing a dog and pony show, because you're like, oh, we need you.
I want to high five you on that one, because that's what it is.
Right.
Right.
And that's not what we want to be. We would rather have fewer resources, do fewer projects, We want to be well-resourced to do those few that we choose to do, and exist in liberation and freedom, which I think will then
produce
out.
Better art, exactly. Right?
Now, how are foundations responding to this ethos? I guess not my ethos, but this ethic that you have. How are foundations responding to that?
Yeah. I mean, I'll first begin by saying there's a lot more work to be done in cultivation with mm-hmm. foundations, and there's mm-hmm. much room to grow. But our existing funders have dug back in and are continuing to fund us, thankfully. We've actually had several new prospects come our way that we are actively working in partnership with. They're very curious, really excited. I'm asking questions like, well, what kind of scaffolding do you need? We've built out a 5-year vision and operational plan for how to get to sustainability. And I think that, foundations are really curious. They want to see this kind of, the ones we're in conversation with want to see this kind of radical change, because we have been having these important conversations about why is it that our systems are embedded with racism? You know, why are they embedded with classism? You know, why is it so hard as a poor person of color to break into this field? You know, so the ways that we are attempting to make our space more equitable is appealing. I have to stop there.
No, that's okay, because I also wanted to speak about the idea that about pay and things of that nature. Can you talk about artists feeling as though they're not being paid for work or they want to be paid for work? Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, because the Flea has a history of a volunteer acting company.
Right. That.
Was staff too, or just? Or,
it, was, no. it was just for. It was a program right. Amongst all of the different artistic programs, specifically called the BATS program for young actors or early career actors who were attempting to get their first, opportunities. And so the theater produced plays that folks could come and be a part of, and get credits and making work in New York. And when it was originally conceived in 1996, it was part of the ethos of downtown, sweat equity, make a thing. Mm-hmm. And that time, its day had come past due, to rethink. And so, every artist at the institution makes, makes pay. Every person working at the theater, in our art, in our making, in our staff level makes pay. Because that is the way that, in our culture, we express value through money.
Yes, we do.
Just the truth.
That's the truth. That's the truth
of it. And if we're saying, "Hey, we want to support you and you're valuable," then we're going to make sure you get paid, and everyone across the board equitably. Even our salaries for our technical folks and staff have all raised up. That this is the kind of we have to make the world that we want to live in.
I really applaud what you're doing. This has been an incredible conversation. And thank you so much, Nigel, for being a guest on our show. Thank you.
Sure. I think it's also, I just want to add to that.
Okay, go right ahead.
I think it's another dimension to this idea of raising the level of some staff members to key stakeholders. That's really unique. So
thank you both.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.